Hey, folks, Attorney Andrew Branca here from Law of Self-Defense, and I just have a short show to share with all of you today. We're having a bit of a snowpocalypse here in the Denver area, expecting between 2 and 3 feet of snow. So we're just all hunkered down. Everything is pretty much shut down. But I did want to get this short pre-recorded show out to all of you. As a reminder about the deceitful media twisting the truth in self-defense cases. I have a specific example to share with you. Of course, this is perhaps the most common thing in the world, but that's what I wanted to discuss with all of you today. So in the interest of being time efficient, let's go ahead and launch today's show. All right, and I do want to mention, of course, that today's show is sponsored by none other than Law of Self-Defense itself. Twice a year, I teach a full-day Law of Self-Defense advanced class. This is taught live, personally by me, streamed to you at your computer. A full day of learning everything you need to learn to be hard to convict if you're ever compelled to use force in defense of yourself, your family, your property. We cover how the criminal justice system perceives and makes decisions about self-defense cases, what makes a self-defense case an attractive target for prosecution. In other words, things you should avoid doing so that you are not an attractive target for prosecution. We talk, of course, about the 5 elements of self-defense in great detail, roughly half an hour on each of those. We talk about defense of others, family, colleagues, neighbors, strangers, and the different risks in each of those categories. We talk about defense of property, both highly defensible property like your home, as well as simple personal property. We talk about interacting with the police in the aftermath of a use of force event. That takes almost an hour by itself. That's how subtle that interaction can be. And we share with you what you need to know to maximize the value to your defense that you can get out of that and mitigate your risks of interacting with the police. And we do much, much more over the course of that day. You can see the bulleted syllabus at lawofselfdefense.com/advanced. More than 100 very specific use of force law questions that we explain in plain English over the course of the day. And it's coming up Saturday, April 20th. Twice a year we do this at most. So if you miss this April 20th class, it'll be at least October before you have another opportunity. Can you wait another 6 months before you learn how to be hard to convict? Do you know when you're going to be attacked, or do you need this information, this expertise, this insight on board right now, as soon as you can get it, so that you have it in the moment of crisis? It doesn't help you to learn how to be hard to convict after the use of force event. You need to know it at the time so you can apply that information in an actionable way while you're defending yourself effectively and decisively. If you can't make the Saturday date, Saturday, April 20th, I would tell you to sign up anyway, because every registered student would also get access to the playback recorded version of that class for at least 2 weeks after the class. So you can watch it at your leisure, even if you're otherwise occupied on Saturday, April 20th. Again, all of that. Oh, and of course, we are in the early registration period. Register now and you get 50% off the normal registration. All of that at lawofselfdefense.com/advanced. All right. So let's talk about this news report. First of all, it was brought to my attention on Twitter, as so much is, by Phoenix Ammunition. Phoenix Ammunition is a maker of ammunition. I've bought a bunch of their stuff. It's really good. So if you like top quality, I mean really top quality ammo, the effort these guys put into the precision of their ammunition is amazing. I would encourage you to check out Phoenix Ammunition. They do great work over there. But here they put up a toast about this news report. The headline reads, "Road rage shooting, no charges for woman who wounded mother and daughter." That sounds terrible. Someone lost control of their emotions, had a road rage incident, and whipped out a gun and shot a mother and daughter? What monster? What a monster that person had to be. How horrific. Guess what? And that's how the media reported it, by the way. That's what that headline is intended to suggest. What actually happened? What actually happened is that mother and daughter were the violent, unlawful aggressors against an innocent woman driving by herself in a car. They attacked her with such intensity that bystanders were about to intervene on her behalf until they saw that the lawful defender had a gun and was prepared to use it to save her life. And that's how the mother and daughter got shot. not because they were innocent victims of somebody's road rage, because they were the road rage. They were the aggressors. And they made the mistake of attacking a woman who had a gun and was prepared to use it. Phoenix writes here, typical of your average NPC news outlet, the headline fails to mention the female concealed pistol license holder, the driver who was attacked, defended herself as she was attacked by both the mother and her daughter. No pictures, by the way, of the mother and daughter. Make of that what you will in the news report. The headline should be, no charges for woman who shot two attackers. Quite right, Phoenix Arm. So let's take a look at the actual news report. Road rage shooting. Was it a road rage shooting? It was a road rage attack by the mother and daughter. The shooting was not in road rage. The shooting was in defense against road rage. No charges for a woman who wounded mother, daughter. And by the way, the police sought an arrest warrant for this woman who defended herself. Fortunately, that woman was dealing with reasonable prosecutors who declined to issue a warrant for her arrest, despite the request from police. Make this a little bigger. Citing the law of self-defense, there will be no charges in a double shooting that took place in Sterling Heights on February 27th, not so long ago. A woman assaulted by a mother and daughter, and who is a concealed pistol license holder, pulled her pistol out and shot both attackers. Quote, denying charges on the ground of self-defense is a recognition of the inherent right to protect oneself when faced with imminent danger, close quote, said Macomb County Prosecutor Pete Lucido. Lucido did not file charges against the two women after investigation, witness interviews, and speaking with the shooter. The women who were shot are recovering from non-life-threatening injuries. I wonder why he didn't charge them. Because if the defender was legally justified, that means she was under criminal assault. The incident happened when the mother and daughter inside a Jeep Compass followed the victim inside her Dodge Durango to Carrabba's Italian Grill on Schoner. The Durango driver, the defender, stopped at a stop sign in the shopping plaza near the restaurant when the mother and daughter got out of their SUV, went to the driver's side, and began physically assaulting her. What happens when you physically assault someone inside their vehicle? Well, in many jurisdictions, that vehicle is treated much as the defender's home, as their castle. And if you unlawfully and forcibly enter or attempt to breach that vehicle, there's a legal presumption that that defender has a reasonable perception of an imminent deadly force threat, meaning they can use deadly defensive force to defend themselves. There's often also another legal presumption, not about the state of mind of the defender, but about the state of mind of the aggressor trying to breach the vehicle, that they're doing that with the intent of causing deadly force harm to the occupants. A bystander rushed to the aid of the woman defending herself, but fled once she heard the gunshot. So bystanders saw this was obviously an attack on the defender. An eyewitness who called 911 said, quote, those two girls tried to attack the shooter. Those two girls were beating up on her, close quote. Now, did they have a weapon? There's no indication of this. So how could they be? How could they be a deadly force threat? Well, as I just said, if they're breaching the vehicle, it's often legally presumed that they're a deadly force threat. And there's disparity of numbers here. Two attackers on one. I don't care who you are. If two people are attacking you simultaneously, it's almost impossible for you to effectively defend yourself absent the use of a defensive weapon on your part. Last week, the Sterling Heights Police Department submitted a warrant request to the prosecutor, to the prosecutor's office warrant unit for possible charges against the shooter. So the police wanted the charger. On March 12th, the warrant unit denied charges against the driver of the Durango, citing self-defense. That's the whole news story. So how deceptively presented and how eager were the police to charge this poor woman who was obviously being attacked by two unlawful aggressors who came to her? She did not go to them. She was stopped at a stop sign. They got out of their vehicle after following her. And when she was legally stopped at that stop sign, they exploited that opportunity to physically attack her. They're just lucky they're not dead. This defender could probably use a shooting class if this was the outcome, or perhaps a higher quality higher caliber defensive weapon. Maybe Phoenix Ammunition could help out with some sample 9mm plus ammo. Well, the reason I want to share this, of course, is it's the most common thing in the world, right? Those of you who were around during the George Zimmerman trial and watched my coverage of that, you pretty much had to watch my coverage of that for this purpose, know well the dozen or so outrageous lies that were told by people like Attorney Ben Crump, by the prosecutors in that case, and repeated relentlessly by the media for a year and a half before Zimmerman went to trial, poisoning the community's view of that event, poisoning the jury pool, deliberately so. The media itself made up its own lies. They falsely edited Zimmerman's 911 call to make it sound as if he had some particular interest in Trayvon Martin's race. The only reason he mentioned race in his 911 call is because the dispatcher asked him about the race of this suspicious character. Well, the media deleted the request, so it sounds like George Zimmerman was just spontaneously offering up that Trayvon Martin looked black. We saw much the same. There were many, many more lies, of course, that he got out of the car after being told by the dispatcher not to do that. 100% lie. That he chased down Trayvon Martin. 100% lie, demonstrably so. The media lightened Zimmerman's skin color to make him look whiter in their photographs. And of course, all the photographs they showed of Trayvon Martin were as a 12-year-old child, not the muscular, tall, strong, street-biting, grill-wearing 17-year-old that Trayvon Martin was. In fact, in the Kyle Rittenhouse, we had the same thing. People polled after the Rittenhouse trial still believed by unbelievable numbers that Kyle Rittenhouse had shot three black people, even though the only people he shot were all white people who were attacking him with deadly force at the time that he shot them, lawfully so. Many, many lies that he carried his rifle across state lines. Simply untrue. So I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but I just want to remind everybody, especially those of you out there who take the view of, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Now, of course, we'd all rather be defending ourselves at trial than dead in the street. But first of all, those are not the only two options. You can defend yourself decisively, effectively, and lawfully, and mitigate, reduce your risk of having to defend yourself at trial to as close to zero as possible. But the people who say that always also seem to presume that if only they're given the opportunity to be judged by 12, those 12 people will obviously see that their use of force was lawful self-defense. No, folks, no. I mean, our mission here at Law of Self-Defense is to help you reduce your risk of being charged, prosecuted, convicted, sentenced to life in prison to as close to zero as possible. But that risk is never zero. It's always a greater than zero risk that you end up getting convicted. If we have to put you in front of a jury, it's upwards of 50% risk. Now, we like to think we can get that risk down if you follow our instruction to 10%, but it's never 0%. And part of the reason it's not 0% is just noise in the system. Juries are dangerous and unpredictable creatures, independent of everything else. But imagine that jury pool has been utterly poisoned by a year and a half worth of this kind of media reporting, presenting you as some kind of deranged road rage shooter. You think you're going to get an unbiased, impartial jury in that jurisdiction, especially if you're from outside that jurisdiction? Maybe, but it gets harder. And it gets harder because of this kind of media bias. They are actively working against you. It's in their interest to get more clicks, get more views, get more ad revenue, to make your act of self-defense look as non-boring as possible, as non-legitimate as possible. You too could be the next quote-unquote racist murderer that spends a year and a half in the headlines before you go to trial. Obviously, if you find yourself facing a threat, you have to win the physical fight. I'm not telling you not to do that. If you don't win the physical fight, everything else becomes less important. But if, consistent with safety, you can avoid getting engaged in that fight, avoid having to use force in self-defense. And that might be stuff like leaving the area, retreating from the confrontation, even though you're in one of the large majority of states, 39 states, that are stand your ground states, where you don't have a legal duty to retreat. But if you can do so consistent with safety and the safety of those you have a duty to protect, I would urge you to take advantage of that opportunity. The best way to win a fight is to not get into the fight in the first place, to be someplace else. And that's a fist fight, a knife fight, a gun fight. Because one of the risks, the moment you get engaged in that physical confrontation, you've just incurred a greater than zero risk of dying in that fight. There's no magic pixie dust that says you win. And a greater than zero risk of going to jail, going to prison for the rest of your life. Because both those risks, the physical risk and the legal risk, are never zero. And this is one of the reasons why, this kind of media bias. All right, folks, I know that is a short show for today. I've got to get back to the snowpocalypse. That's about it for this week, I think. So I look forward to seeing all of you next week. We start a whole other series of Law of Self-Defense show content. Really looking forward to that. And I'll see you all there. Until then, I'll just remind you, if you carry a gun so you're hard to kill, like this woman driver did, carried a gun so she was hard to kill, so her family would be hard to kill. That's why I carry a gun, have every day of my adult life carried a gun. So I'm hard to kill, so my family is hard to kill. If that's why you do that, well, you also owe it to yourself and your family to make sure you know the law so you're hard to convict as well. Until next time, I remain Attorney Andrew Branca for the Law of Self-Defense. Stay safe.